This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Stylefile, where we cover everything and anything on the business of fashion. I'm Azura Rahman, and for this week's Style Makers, we have Yoki and Yoksin Team, the founders of shoemakers Yok & Team.
We wanted to create shoes that not having a person to look at it at the first sight and say, oh, these are women's shoes. We wanted to have a range of products that's genderless because we don't want people to think of women to have a specific kind of image.
After that, Lee Chulin and I will be going over what's made headlines in the fashion industry.
Recently, I've been thinking about getting back into bikinis, but also not seeing anything I want. And I think maybe my eye has changed and that maybe, yes, to some degree, what's wrong with a nice one piece?
And finally, Emma Chong Johnson of Elle Malaysia gets all hung up with the trend for the new bomber jacket.
So the big bomber jacket that's been seen a lot recently is in like jewel tones and lots of embroidery, birds, flowers, tigers. A lot of the brands have done it. Gucci, Coach.
First up though, our style makers for this week, Yoki and Yoksin Team. As a family that's been in the footwear industry for over three generations, the Themes are people that are au fait with the art of shoemaking. With aims of bringing something new to the market, sisters Yoki and Yoksin decide to break out of the family business by creating their own label, Yok & Team. Founded just last year, the label is fairly new to the local footwear scene, and one would think that the brand would need at least a few years to properly establish themselves, but the success its pieces have gained in just a year proves otherwise. Their collections consist of pieces made for steadiness and durability in any weather, yet remain affordable for anyone to purchase. As the saying goes, good shoes take you to good places, and this homegrown brand continues to present comfy kicks in unique designs for any shoe wearer in Malaysia. Adeline Chung caught up with them as they shared more of their family background and the makings of their pieces.
Now, I mean, your family has been involved in the shoe business for many years and even have their own shoe factory in Ipoh. So how did it all started?
Actually, you know, we were sitting down in our bed, you know, talking like as usual, because we're always thinking, oh, maybe we should do our own brand. So I think that's how we started the brand.
Yeah, it also started once I come back from Australia. I actually always dream of having my own label. Of course, having my sisters together to work on it will be even more great because we all come from the shoemaking background. So after a few years working, I started having this determination to talk to my sisters. Why not we use what we have now? Because we already have the resources. So we start to do something that we love. We wanted to think of a brand that represents our family and our sisters. And then we thought of having a brand called Yok & Team.
Yeah. I think the Yok is our middle name and the Team is our surname. Mm-hmm. So that kind of relevance of what we're doing.
So let's just say ideas develop when you're in bed together,
yes,
right?
Yes, definitely.
Having a chat, a casual chat and all. Now, both your fathers and your grandfathers were cobblers. And what kind of shoes do they make back then?
Well, my granddad actually is a shoemaker back then in Guangzhou. So he already have those ambition want to make his own shoes. So he has a little shop in Guangzhou to make shoes. And it carry on to my dad, which is a manufacturer. And
in Ipoh, right?
In Ipoh. And he designed all the shoes by himself. And my mom also. So they both kind of help each other. It started with the children's shoes, like boy shoes. And then now we switched to lady shoes.
Yeah. So is that why you ladies, you know, got inspired by your parents and
all? That's
why you want to continue the legacy of your parents,
yes,
your family?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, because we've been experiencing it since childhood. So I think that's really helped us in creative sides and also in production side. Yeah.
Was it easier starting up your own footwear label? I mean, given the skills that, you know, you've attained from your father and grandfather while growing up?
It does give us advantage because we've been brought up with this kind of background. At first, it's quite difficult because Malaysia is a multi-racial country. You have to have a suitable size of all the feet. I think that's the big task for us, but eventually we found it.
Why do you start a new label and not continue from your parents' or your grandfather's business itself?
Because we always want to break the rules. We want to...
Rebels.
Yeah, because having a dream to create our label is also having to do whatever we love and to create something that we want instead of people telling us. Because there's a difference between supplying shoes for clients according to their wants and needs and with creating something that you love and you want others to wear. So creating this brand enabled us to create something not only that we love, but hopefully our wearers love it. So that's what motivates us to create a brand called Yoke & Team.
Does your parents guide you through, you know, when it comes to designing shoes and all?
Definitely, because they are more experienced in this area. Also, we gain a lot of knowledge from them, especially on production side and technical side, because shoe is very... it's very complicated. Every detail represents the shoes. It doesn't matter how beautiful the shoes, but if it doesn't wearable, it can't be a perfect shoe. So.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things to consider as well in terms of like comfort.
Yeah, and design as well. So that's our main team, like for Yoke & Team. We always target to be comfortable, but yet stylish.
What made you girls design sandals?
I think it's because, well, Malaysia is a very hot country. We wear sandals all the time. I think it's very easy to approach to the majority of the target audience.
We actually specialize a lot in summer sandals. Yeah, so we wanted to use what we are specialized first to make a very good quality collections. And then moving on, we don't limit ourselves to sandals. Once we get this solid, and then we will
venture
explore
to other designs as well.
We don't limit ourselves in just sandals.
Like into flats or heels.
Yeah, that would be the next step and all, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, I mean, as we are aware, women's fashion trends in terms of like shoes, you know, have changed quite a bit. You know, some are slightly manlier elements, you know, like slippers, loafers, gladiator sandals, which is in trend right now. I mean, do you think that's the direction for footwear from now on?
The direction of footwear can be many ways. It all still comes back to what you want your clients to wear and what kind of image you want to portray, what kind of design direction you wanted to do. There's no specific direction that we have to follow. But I would say for our brand, one of our brand aesthetic is we actually imagine every woman to have two faces. Not a woman with long hair and not necessarily she's the one that are feminine and delicate. She can have a long hair and she could wear high heels, but she could have a strong mind. But on the other hand, even if she's wearing something masculine, like something that we are producing now, she could have a very feminine side of her. So this is actually our brand aesthetics. We wanted to create a shoes that not having a person to look at it at the first sight and say, oh, these are women's shoes or, oh, these are men's shoes. We wanted to have a range of products that's genderless because we don't want people to think of women to have a specific kind of image.
Yeah, and all depends on how they dress up as well, right? And how they style with your sandals.
Yeah, it's kind of how you express yourself. So this is the directions of our brand.
What are some of your most popular designs?
The most popular?
Most popular for now, we have the Zeus sandal that's come with like a marble-ish design. And some people say it looks like the cow from New Zealand because of the black and white outsole. So it depends how you imagine it. I think that's also the reason why the products become one of our most outstanding and the best-selling one.
Where do you get your inspiration in terms of the design and the colour?
Well, music plays a big theme in my inspiration. And travelling as well. Like, example, recently I travelled to Segovia in Spain. I mean, it's fascinating how the old city, you know, can be full of history and culture. That brings me lots of good vibe and energy.
Each and every sandal has their own story behind it.
Yeah, we're trying to have personality in different kind of shoes,
And your brand has only been around for about a year, right? And you have personalities like Sheena Liam wearing your shoes. So who else wears Yoke & Team?
Our shoes are suitable for all kinds. Like, doesn't matter what kind of profession, whether she's a model, whether she's a celebrity, or she's a normal working class. Yeah, and we really appreciate that the TV personality and the fashion personality appreciate our designs. This also encouraged us to believe in our designs and to move on.
Now, in terms of designing the shoes and inspirations that we've talked about, is it just both of you working together or do you have a team with you?
For design-wise, yes, we always work together, just two of us. we normally sit down and talk about what we need to achieve for the next project and mm-hmm. everything. But obviously, from the production side, we always go back to our factory and then ask the opinion from our parents, you know, how mm-hmm. to make the shoes more comfortable and yet more stylish, you mm-hmm. know, to have both sides. It's a family business, so we always sit together and talk about it. But in design-wise and development, just me and Yuki.
Working together as a family, I'm sure there are arguments and disagreements and
There's a lot.
Yeah.
How do you deal with it?
We just have to have a very short memory of it. Try to
be Dory Fish.
Forget everything.
I mean, we fight a lot.
Yeah.
But you always come back to one thing, which is what's good for the brand. Mm-hmm. So if we, you know, sit down and cool down for 2 minutes and then that's good for a brand, we will take a side of the temper and then mm-hmm. talk about the whole picture. That's what's good about being a sister. You can't really mad at each other for
blood
too long.
Blood is thicker than water, definitely.
You can't.
So this is your full time for designing shoes?
Yeah, we think that we need a person to be full time in order for the brand to move forward. I decided to quit my job. And because Yuxin, she based in Ipoh and she also having a full time job there. So we both have to work closely in terms of product development. I'm actually running the operations here. So anything that related to production, then I have to travel back and we discuss
travel
together.
Travel to Ipoh, back and forth.
Sometimes I travel back. Uh-huh. Travel to KL and then we have to discuss a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So multitasking.
Multitasking is good.
Which I think women right now are very good on.
Multitasking, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, when I first discovered your brand, you know, and looking at your website, the first thing that came to mind is like going back to the good old days, you know, when I used to wear Velcro sandals. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think the designs that you have is just so unique. You know, you have heels and your shoes are made out of leather and rubber as well, right? So what's the benefits of it?
The benefits will be durable. Mm-hmm. Some of our customers found our rubber sole is heavy. It's heavy because it's sturdy. Mm-hmm. And also the important features of our shoes are the spongy footbed. Mm-hmm. That one, we source it directly to look for this kind of material that have a very soft feeling when you step on it.
And supportive.
Yeah, because you want it to be comfortable on the base where you step on it. Because we believe that in order to walk all day long, you would love to step on something soft rather than something hard. Mm-hmm. It has the open toe concept. So no matter what kind of weather, you still be able to wear it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the very stuffy kind of feeling when you wear it.
Not humid at all.
Yeah, it's because of the sandals that is suitable to wear it in the summer. And some customers, they like to wear it with the socks when they are in a much colder country. Mm-hmm. And
very Japanese.
To look different.
Yeah, look different.
Yeah, and you can wear it in summer or autumn.
So where do you source the materials from?
Half in local, half in overseas, well, mainly in China.
Yeah, I would say our sourcing country will be international because we wanted to have more variety of materials. That's why we don't limit ourselves to one place. And it's also enabled us to explore more on the different designs, colors.
I saw, you know, you've given your Serena sandal a new makeover, which is like a little bit of army look kind, you know. Can you tell us more about the changes made in why do you choose to revamp this design in particular?
The most important reason is because the shoes is selling well.
Why is it selling well?
Yeah. I think they like the crossing features. It looks really nice when you are wearing with a skirt or shorts because it's crossover on the arch of your feet and it has a kind of lengthening effects. Mm-hmm. They like the burgundy colors.
Mm-hmm. But you have two colors on you, right?
Yeah. So the burgundy is the best selling colors. It's also very easy to wear because it doesn't have any buckle or Velcro. It's like a slip-on sandal.
Is it just for Serena sandals or the rest of other sandals, they are elastic as well?
We have a mix of elastic and textiles, but the other sandals, you still have to open up the buckle or take out the Velcro. But for Serena sandal, it's just a slip-on sandal.
Okay, now let's talk about your future. So it's being, you know, said that, you know, you guys have been around for just a year, you know. Are there any upcoming projects you'll be working on with?
Yes, and the nearest one will be next week on next Wednesday. We're going to launch our fall 2016 collection in Fabs by Mid Valley. So if anyone is free on 14 September, they can drop by and have a look on our collections. And yes, you could try the shoes before buying. So don't worry of buying shoes that don't fit you. Yes.
Do you plan on finding more offline stockies, you know, perhaps get your own standalone store?
It will be in the future. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are planning on it, but it won't be so soon. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we are still very new in the market, so we're still trying to be better. Mm-hmm. So once we're ready, I'm sure you'll be the first one to find out.
Thank you. What about collaboration? So are there any other local designers that you want to collaborate with?
Yeah, there are a lot of them, but it depends whether they want to collaborate with us. Yeah.
So do you want to name a few that you like?
Actually, the most straightforward collaboration is the runway collaborations. Mm-hmm. We just did one with Pearly Wong. So we borrowed some of our shoes to her. That's our first collaboration with fashion designers. We hope to have more coming up. And we also want to explore not only with fashion designers, we want to collaborate with accessories like patches, pins.
There's a lot of guys asking us like, oh, do you guys do men's shoes? Because we find it's really nice. We couldn't find it in the market right now.
Yeah, it's also because of our brand aesthetics. It does attract a lot of male customers that want to own a pair of it. So that makes us to think about having our own men's collections.
Where do you see your brand in the next 5 years?
What we want our brand to be in the future is we wanted to be in the major fashion cities. We wanted to actually expand to South Korea and Hong Kong because we see the market is a market that will accept this kind of shoes. And also we see that the markets are very suitable for us. And for now, we still want to expand ourselves in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, we also want to be a brand that say it's from Malaysia. Besides Jimmy Choo, we want to have Jürgen Tim in the international market to be there as a Malaysian brand for shoes. That's our aim, I think, for the future brand. Yeah.
Coming up next, Lee Chui Lin and I will be going over the latest news in the fashion industry. But before that, here's Florence and the Machine with Spectrum Say My Name, the Calvin Harris remix, played at Charlotte Ronson's Spring-Summer 2016 collection in New York. This is Stylefile on BFM 89.9. It's Stylefile on BFM 89.9, bringing fashion to you over the airwaves. I'm Azura Rahman, and it's time for Style Scoop with Lee Chui Lin. First important question of the weekend is the bikini over. And of course, it's a very important one, Lynn. Trust the folks at the Good Old Garden starting a debate on whether the bikini is dead. And I put an emphasis on bikini because, of course, the burkini, which is the complete opposite of the bikini, has been in much debate recently with the ban of those swimming apparel in most beaches in France, which has now been overturned. The questions that's been raised by the folks at Garden is whether modesty is something that most people aspire to when it comes to swimwear, and whether the bikini will be collateral damage to the debate on the burkini, in the sense that whether people don't want to wear two pieces anymore anyway, for whether it's reasons of modesty, protection against the sun, or just that good old chestnut of things moving in cycles in fashion. Are you a fan of the two piece or the one piece?
I have to admit that in my swimwear choices, I think I have been a victim to trend in the past. I desired the bikini. I lived through the pressures of, do you have the bikini body? Are you ready for the bikini? And then when the one piece came around again, I was like, yes, I'm ready for this. And recently I've been thinking about getting back into bikinis, but also not seeing anything I want. And I think maybe my eye has changed, and that maybe, yes, to some degree, what's wrong with a nice one piece?
I like the phrase that you use, that your eye has changed. And that just means that you have become accustomed to certain silhouettes, or you know, the way how things are worn. It's just how we, our eye has changed with jeans, how we moved away from the bootcuts of the late 90s to where we are now. Skinny's now moving back to the more 90s high-waisted shapes. Things that you thought were pretty much acceptable are now just seen kind of old-fashioned, and it seems that the bikini has kind of gone that way. It's much more edgy to be in a one-piece as opposed to a two-piece, isn't it?
It's not just that. I think it's also that the shape of the bikinis that we're seeing seeing aren't as interesting as the shapes of the one pieces. We're seeing a lot of interesting things being done with not just cutouts, but high necks, you know, just interesting ways of wrapping a piece of stretchy fabric around your body. And there is also the realization that modesty can be sexy if it's well cut. You know, there used to be the one pieces, I don't know about you, but of my teenage years and my childhood, those were not flattering. You know, those were...
You seem to be a bit of a prude to wear a one piece in that
exactly.
sense.
Exactly. And more often than not, they're sort of the province of the less confident, or just generally speaking, they were sort of anti-material. You know, they were made in certain patterns. And to have the option now of these really flattering and
stylish
one pieces that also allow you to just do things, you know, without having to make 1,000 adjustments every time you sit or stand or enter the water or leave the water. I'm not swearing off bikinis for life because heaven knows they have a place in time. But yeah, I'm quite excited about them kind of declining, I suppose.
I think it's also that whole noughties 2000s kind of preoccupation with the female body, you know, with how the music videos have evolved. I think people want to take ownership of their bodies again, not having to attain that bikini body you were talking about. And there's been a lot of pressure, you know, come round holiday time, you see the articles of, you know, how to achieve the perfect bikini body. You've seen the likes of advertising watchdogs in the UK who've actually disallowed the use of, you know, getting the perfect bikini bodies for advertisements because it promotes an unhealthy mindset when it comes to thinking about your bodies amongst young, impressionable women. And going back to the burkini debate, I think as long as you're allowed to wear whatever you're comfortable with, and if that means a one piece now, or if you just want to still hang around in your string bikini, why the hell not, right?
I agree. I think so long as you're on the beach and you're happy, right, you know, and you feel good, whatever that is, go do you. For me right now, it's the one piece.
It's the one piece for me too. At least we're on the same page on that.
Yes.
Okay, for our next story for this week, Instagram is ruining the fashion industry now. I'm all for sensationalist headlines, and this came up from the New York Post nonetheless. To put it to a finer point, what they're putting forward in a piece leading up to New York Fashion Week is that Instagram celebrities are ruining the fashion industry. And they cited a few cases of where these days celebrities aren't the only ones paid to wear designer labels. Women's Wear Daily reports the most famous fashion bloggers like Italy's Chiara Ferragni, also known as the Blonde Salad, Christina Bazan, don't know who she is, but they are being paid, you know, up to $20,000 for each post when they're endorsing a product. The question that they've posed, is this now the new American dream, making tons of cash in exchange for narcissism, as opposed to being creative in the fashion industry and creating things and making things as opposed to just wearing them and posting them?
I will say that my initial reaction to the article is that I both agree with it and I think it's high snobbery.
It is.
It is.
It reminds me of that article by Susie Menkes a few years ago about, you know, the whole circus around Fashion Week and how people are just taking photographs as opposed to being paying attention to what's on the runways. It's an old guard versus a new guard kind of thing, right?
It is. It's also the Instagram model versus the supermodel, the super supers. It's kind of along the same lines. It's just people being scared of something new.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, I see how some people are being rewarded on Instagram for doing nothing more than wearing a watch and having a following. But I did unfollow the Blonde Salad because I wasn't finding style and inspiration in her posts. And that's okay. You know, the way they're writing it is as if the whole world is just one giant sheeple. I use that deliberately. It's not many. It's just one giant sheeple, you know, just saying, oh, Instagram, I will follow you. I will like everything you do. And that's not the case with Instagram. I don't know. It's not how I use it. I don't think it's how you use it.
No. The thing is, let's use Chiara Ferragni, the Blonde Salad, as a case in point. She has also kind of switched that around in the sense that, you know, she has used her following to become a designer herself. And she's got a range of shoes which are moderately successful, you know, obviously in terms of design, not exactly groundbreaking, but she's obviously a very shrewd businesswoman. But as someone who follows her account, you do get tired because of the deluge of posts that are sometimes so obviously sponsored. So you know you're not getting something that is original, but it's something that's been curated by a marketing person in Gucci or, you know, Louis Vuitton, whatever it is. You know that there's no sincerity in there. And of course, the advertising rules in the United States have actually stipulated you need to clearly mark out posts that are sponsored. So you do know kind of what you're reading. And it does turn me off sometimes. You know, I've thought a couple of times to stop following her. But what this whole debate kind of really brings to forth, and I agree with you, is just how the rules of the game is changing. I don't think it'll put people off from wanting to be a designer because they can make more money from being an Instagram celebrity. those people would never cut it as being a designer anyway, I think.
That's the thing. I don't think it has to be one or the other. And I think there's also the question of what does it mean to create style? When you call somebody a style maker, what are you actually saying? Do they have to be designers? Iris Apfel did not design until she was an octogenarian, I think. But does that mean that she wasn't a stylish person? Does that mean that her Instagram would not have given me value in my life as somebody interested in style and fashion? I think that's a very snobbish way to approach it.
Yeah, it's just trying to ring fence, you know, who should be within this elusive circle of fashion people as opposed to, you know, leaving it to the democracies of social media, right?
Trust the fashion editor to be afraid of Instagram in that
sense. It was a fashion editor who wrote this article, and I think an older fashion editor, I imagine, as opposed to a young 20-something who's making millions off Instagram. Mm.
Yeah, so I agree in some ways. Yes, there are posts that are vapid and empty, and you can unfollow them. And if they want to make money, and if they're successful at making money, why are you being so begrudging and grumpy? Leave them to it.
Do you think come to a head in the sense that, you know, at one point, people will no longer pay attention to this deluge of Instagram celebrities, key opinion leaders, you know? Do you think, you know, people will get fed up with that and then look at other means of information or getting, you know, style inspiration from?
I think everything is cyclical, but Instagram's strength, of course, is how visual it is. You know, it's just so visual. It's delivered right to you. So in terms of seeking inspiration, I mean, Instagram didn't replace Pinterest. Pinterest continues to be what it is. So if it does come to a head, I think it's going to be years and years from now, personally. I mean, I don't see that changing. But again, I don't see the problem.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, for our final story for this week, mass market brides. Looking locally now, Rizalman Ibrahim will be launching his ready-to-wear off-the-peg bridal creations for Zalora, who he has collaborated many, many times already, set to launch in February 2017. Details are still unclear at the moment, but apparently it will also encompass bridesmaid dresses and accessories. So we've got the full gamut. Now, this has raised quite a few interesting questions for me. Of course, Rizalman is known to be a trendsetter when it comes to his business strategies. He was one of the first major designers to do a ready-to-wear collaboration 3-4 years ago with Zalora. And I think he mentioned earlier on when he launched his Raya ready-to-wear collection this year that he wants to seek something different. And here it is, you know, ready-to-wear off-the-peg bridal dresses. What's your take on it? Do you think our local brides will take to buying a wedding dress that's possibly worn by 100 other brides, literally?
Yes, I think so.
It's a special day, though.
It is a special day, that's true. And I think that's what your tailors are for. But that depends on how you feel. I mean, if you are somebody who's incredibly precious over a label and you have a Rizalman and you don't want to touch it, then I don't know what to say to you. But I think that having something to use as a base of sorts, trusting that your special day will still be special. I mean, let's face it, a white dress is a white dress. How much variation are we all ever really getting, you know? You've seen one princess cut, you've seen them all.
Well, we're talking about Rizalman, which is one of the most talented designers we have here at the moment. And just based on the visuals that I've seen on his Instagram account, on the Zalora Instagram account, just looking at, you know, the visuals that we have, we know that we are in for a treat. And it's going to be basically getting access to his made-to-measure couture collection, what I imagine at a fraction of the price. Because I think the going rates for his bridal gowns, you know, made-to-measure couture for you would go up to easily into the 5-figure bracket, you know, and I imagine this would be much, 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 much less than that. But for those who've always wanted Rizalman to be their designer and, you know, and know they can afford that, this is one way into it.
You know who I'm thinking of while we're talking about this? I'm thinking of Keira Knightley, who wore a Chanel dress for her wedding that she had had before. It wasn't even a new dress, from what I understand.
And she had worn before.
And she had worn before. Exactly. And has said she's worn again since and spilled red wine on. And it's now a dress that she loves because she has so many great memories in it. I think if we were to recalibrate how we think about the wedding dress, you know, if we think that you just want something beautiful that will make you feel good, that is an investment that you can wear again, then what is wrong with a ready-to-wear?
That is the modern girl's way of thinking when it comes to the bridal dress. I completely agree. I hate buying things that I can't use again and again.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, I prefer to buy separates as opposed to dresses, you know, because you can mix and match things. And I think being in the kind of consumerist trap that we are normally in, and you do want to break out from that when you can, I think this is a great way of, you know, not spending too much money on something that you will still like design-wise, So what if someone else is wearing it?
I think it's just adjusting what you think of as an occasion dress. And for many people, the occasion of their lives is going to be their wedding day. And if you can adjust that to think of it as just an outfit that makes you feel good, that makes you happy to wear, and that you want to wear again and you can wear again, I think the collection's going to be gold anyway. Right. I don't think anything's going to stop it from flying off the shelves. But I don't see anything wrong with the repetition of it. I think most bridal gowns are repetitive anyway. We just like to think they're special because they're made for us. Doesn't change the fact that you stole the idea of sleeves from Princess Kate. The point is, it was done before.
Yeah, you can't exactly reinvent the wheel in that sense.
No.
And think about it, you know, 5 years ago, no one thought of buying an off-the-peg baju kurung for raya from a designer, thinking, who wants to, you know, end up looking like so-and-so from Two Doors Down during this first year of raya? But look at the amount of designers who've now jumped into the ready-to-wear foray when it comes to, you know, baju raya. And this could be the start of something else, right?
Yeah, and maybe if we're less precious about who has seen us in what and when we can wear certain things, yeah.
After the break, we have Emma Chong Johnston, Managing Editor of Elle Malaysia, and we're going to be talking about the next trend for the new bomber jacket. It's Azura Rahman on Stylefile. Next up, we have Emma Chong Johnston of Elle Malaysia with her thoughts on the new bomber jacket. This time round, we are talking about the new bomber jackets.
Yeah.
Because there's something different between the new and the old ones. I imagine silhouettes, that kind of thing.
So the big bomber jacket that's been seen a lot recently is in like jewel tones and lots of embroidery, birds, flowers, tigers. A lot of the brands have done it. Gucci, Coach. And so, yeah, that's still really big. But I think going into the autumn-winter season, there's going to be a lot more emphasis on the kind of more puffer style. So the silhouettes are going to be a bit more exaggerated, more voluminous. And then there's also a few different trends that overlap with the bomber jacket. So there's the varsity jacket. Rather than just the embroidery, there's lots of patches this time and kind of appliques and things like that.
It sounds like the bomber jacket has really taken over the blazer as the choice jacket, right? Because you can really spot it from the time when Ryan Gosling wore that one in Drive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of spewed on a lot of imitations. And you mentioned, yes, Gucci with its heavily embroidered ones. So the oversized look is what you're looking for at the moment then. How oversized is oversized? Does it mean that my boyfriend's kind of oversized or...
Obviously on the runway it was really exaggerated and like loads of puffer coats, which is not something that we can do here. And I think that the bomber jacket on its own, it can already be tricky to pull off because it is slightly a bit more, you know, voluminous and a bit more puffy. So yeah, if you are going to go oversized, I would make sure that it's not a really kind of padded bomber jacket, so it hangs a bit better on you. You still get some kind of some shoulder action going on.
Would you have it zipped up or not? Does it matter whether your sleeves are pushed up or not? How's the styling like?
Oh, unzipped and sleeves pushed up is the easiest way for people to wear the bomber jacket, because otherwise it can kind of overwhelm you a little bit because there is a lot of volume going on. But other than that, yeah, it lends itself to a lot of different ways of styling. It's obviously a casual jacket, but I think it looks great with more formal pieces.
And also as a jacket, it also matters what you wear underneath.
Yeah.
What would you wear underneath?
Well, lightweight fabrics for one, since, you know, it's going to be warm.
Put the mohair sweater aside, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, I think that it looks great with just like a white t-shirt and jeans. But I also really like the look of it with like evening wear or just like, you know, cocktail dresses, things that are a little bit more elegant or polished. It kind of adds a nice little bit of street vibe to it.
Since you mentioned it being oversized being quite crucial to the right look, things are a bit more cropped, jackets are a bit more fitted. Does that look a bit passé now then?
It's a tricky one. Yes, but also that is going to be a more flattering solution for a lot of people than the oversized bomber jacket. You just have to kind of like work with your body type and see what looks good on you.
And that was this week's episode of Stylefile. If you've missed any parts of the show, catch up with our podcast on www.bfm.my/stylefile. And don't forget to like our Facebook page, Stylefile on BFM 89.9. Before we go, though, we leave you with Politza with Dark Star. And this was played at Reem Akra's Spring-Summer 2016 collection in New York. This has been Stylefile with me, Azura Rahman, on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the Business Station.